Welcome to the Business Success Network podcast with me, Stacey Calder, helping you to grow yourself and grow your business with tools, tips, and techniques.
Guys, now the last time we met and spoke, Paul, we were on a road trip coming back from Northampton, was it?
Yeah.
And we got all the, you know, the why you started, all that kind of stuff. Obviously, now we're going to interview you for the magazine, but we will use this as a podcast as well, actually, because I've got Kerry here as well, which is great, and it gives you a chance to kind of add your side to it and prod your dad and all that sort of thing. So should we have a bit of a recap and then because it hasn't been that long since we did that podcast, but actually, like I say, we've got Kerry's insights now as well, and we can go through stuff. So and also obviously we'll use it for the magazine because it's good to have a coffee. So I don't know, your dad shared with us on the last podcast that, you know, the sad kind of reason of why this business came around. Maybe I just thought about, what was your take on it? Because obviously it must have been, I mean, I sat in the car with Paul, absolutely, you know, it's a sad story.
Yeah.
And that's from, obviously, the husband's point of view, but from you being daughter, you will have seen it from a different kind of side, really, and...
Yeah, and I guess although the common purpose of Vine was to give us both sort of a new direction in some ways, reasons for doing it were potentially a bit different because of obviously different relationships with Mom. I think when we lost Mom, obviously a huge shock and a massive change in your life that you're not expecting, and especially at the sort of age that we were at. I mean, I'm by no means, me and my sister's kind of young and not able to look after ourselves, but still feel too young to be in the situation that we're in. And it just made me think more about what do you really value in life. And I think for all of us, our number one is family. And working for somebody else, and the company that I worked for when we lost Mom, they were amazing and, you know, let me have the time that I needed. And that was, I couldn't have been in a better place while that happened. But it wasn't really what I was wanting to do anymore, and I think I thought, well, family is what's most important now, and I want to be able to spend as much time with Dad, with my sisters and their kids, and enjoy having that time together. And it seemed like doing something different and a complete change in direction would give us that refocus and enable that to happen. So I think that was my driver behind it, really, was not only that I was perhaps a bit stagnant in my career, but that I also wanted the flexibility to be able to enjoy family time, knowing now how precious it was after what happened.
And I think, you know, it was such a sad thing that you guys went through, but actually, like you say, just hearing you then talking about family is so important. Often business owners and self-employed people, you know, they have this why they're doing the business, which is to spend time with family. It is, I'll hold my hands up, I am one of these people. But you stop working for a boss because you're working 40 hours a week and you want the flexibility, and then actually you start a business and you're working double that sometimes, and it's almost, you know, the business is driving you and you're not driving your business. And we all sit there and say, don't we, that, oh yeah, it's for family, but I get a real sense that it genuinely is for family, and that is at the forefront of your business.
Yeah.
And actually, that lesson that you've learned, I think a lot of businesses out there would get a lot from that message.
Yeah. And it's not that we're, you know, not putting in the hours, it's just that you structure your day slightly differently to be able to go and pick my niece and nephew up from school on a Tuesday afternoon to help my sister out, or to leave a bit early because you've got to take my nephew to Beavers, or, you know, it's all those different things that just mean that you structure your day slightly differently, and you're not governed by, well, the office is only open 9 to 5 and I can't work at weekends, but actually you can you can travel doing what we do.
Yeah, and my raison d'etre is my family. I've been very lucky in life generally, been able to travel the world work wise. I've done okay financially and career wise, and now my focus is doing the best I can for my family in whatever time I've got left.
That's fantastic. It is lovely to hear. So how did that initial conversation start then? What was it? What happened to suddenly... Because I cannot honestly imagine working with my dad. He would drive me crazy, as I'm sure you do.
I probably drive her crazy. No, I think the...
You've got your own desks, which is good. There's a little bit in the middle. You can't see this, obviously, if you're listening to the podcast, but there's a little bit of a desk in the way in case
I ran my own business for 10 years, management consultancy, very successfully. Then when Julie fell in September 2016, I gave it up totally to look after and be with Julie. So when I lost Julie, I've then got two big goals in my life, no Julie, no business. And at that time, I decided, what am I going to do business-wise moving forward? And Kerry, at the almost simultaneously, said, I want to do something different with my life, Dad, from a career perspective. I'm thinking of starting on my own. So we said, well, we're both in the same frame of mind. We do get on. Let's have a look and see what we can do together. And we set it up, but we decided deliberately that we wouldn't give ourselves the financial target in the first 2 years, but that we'd try and get a number of customers. And that number of customers with our business model would sustain us, or get Kerry particularly going forward, because I never know when I'm going to pop my clogs. And therefore...
you're not going anywhere yet, though, are you? I was going to say.
Maybe when you decide you don't want to work anymore will be the reason that you step out of the business, I hope so.
will he ever step away, do you think?
Not fully, no. Won't be able to.
Well, luckily for me, is I actually love what I do. Always have been. I like work, and work for me has been for many, many years, was a way of life, not a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sort of thing I did, business development, I've been all over the world to lots of bigger sports. But I retired in 2006.
How did you find that?
Not very well. I had a year.
Did you annoy the wife?
I don't know about annoy her, but...
I don't think it was quite the picture of retirement that perhaps you both envisaged.
I had a chat with Julie after 12 months, and we both agreed. Why have you given up something you enjoy doing so much? And what have you decided to do? Because you don't like decorating, you don't like gardening, etc.
Not that you don't like, you just can't do it.
Yeah, and we've got a house in Spain at the time, and which we bought with a view to potentially retire to at some stage in the future. Then the kids started talking about having grandchildren, and I couldn't get Julie out of the district, let alone out of the country. so that wasn't a starter. So it's all changed, and then now we're moving on and onwards and upwards.
Fantastic.
And I can honestly say that, apart from the obvious gap, I can't recall feeling more contented and happy for a long time.
And so going back to that, you just said about, when you started for the first 2 years, you weren't setting yourself financial goals, but you were setting yourself a number of clients, and you kind of knew that would make you financially stable. Is that a tip for other businesses then? Is that something that you work with your clients to do?
It depends what you do.
Or is that a secret golden nugget there?
To do that as well, you also need to be in a certain financial position to help you to do that. It's no good, because we knew with the plan we put together that we could fund that ourselves for the first 2 years, even if we didn't get any business.
Right.
So that's what we set out.
So if they've got some financial stability behind them, then that's a good way. If they haven't and they're starting from scratch...
It's not a good model if you've got no money to start with. But it's a great model if you want to build a sustainable business. And once you've started getting money behind you, you can then develop your business in that way.
But I suppose if you haven't got any money, it's still a good thing to know, well, actually, I need X amount of customers this month to pay this amount. And
I think if you know what if you've got a set product or a set service and you know that you can bring in X amount per client actually looking at it from a client point of view is almost less daunting than looking at it from a financial point of view. I don't know, for me, having never done this before, it certainly made me look differently at what clients we're taking on, because there's not that need, I have to take this person on because we need that, you know, we need that money coming in. We can very much look at it as, well, actually we really want to work with that person, or we know that we can add value to them, rather than having everybody.
And that could be something really at the start of a business, like you say, if they are not cash rich, you know, they may take on clients that they don't necessarily fit in with and things like that, and that can lead to a whole kind of nightmare, really.
What I've positioned you is, though, I've said this before, it's important to understand why you're setting the business up. And I've talked about this before a lot. How are you going to exit that business, and at what point in the future? Because dependent on what that is, you run your business in different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you, I mean, okay, so we've kind of moved on to kind of what sort of stuff that you do, and these kind of processes and things like that. And, you know, I think we mentioned in the last podcast some of those processes and things. But actually, do you want to just give us an overview of the kind of things that each of you do? So that the readers and the listeners of the podcast know kind of who's doing what on a day-to-day basis, and actually what you offer in general.
Yeah. Well, I suppose from my point of view, before Vine started, I'd been a marketeer for 10 plus years. And I have done work in agencies, I've worked in-house at companies, I've done things in sport, for charities. And so I still offer an element of that as part of the assistant and support services, but it's kind of taken a back seat to some of the other things that we now do. So bookkeeping being probably the most straightforward to explain, because bookkeeping is bookkeeping. But the type of clients that we work with at the moment are people who haven't kept records up to date particularly well, who want to get onto a digital platform but haven't got the inclination or the know-how to do so, and so we're helping to support them. And we're talking small businesses, I guess, in that sense, and helping them to get themselves organised. And we look at, I suppose, both of us really look at bookkeeping as, it's not just about keeping your information, but it's about making decisions and having the information at your fingertips to be able to make better decisions about your business. So it kind of feeds into the advice side of what we offer.
Absolutely, because people need to know their numbers.
Yeah.
Before they can make those decisions, don't they?
And then from a kind of virtual assistant side, it's very much supporting with administrative tasks, event organisation. With my marketing background, I've also done a lot of events work, so anything like that is something that we can support on. Marketing support, document formatting, if you need a PowerPoint presentation done, all those sorts of the kind of the mundane tasks that people don't really want to spend their time doing or don't have the time to do, because when you are managing your own business, you don't really want to be spending all your hours doing all those kind of fiddly little jobs that end up taking you a lot longer than you ever anticipate they're going to. But you want to be in front of people and doing the thing that you enjoy the most, so we basically provide the wraparound for that.
And the other thing that is dropping out of that is people asking us more about pipeline management.
Okay.
So while the sole trader is busy delivering whatever it is they do, then they're often working on a project by project basis, and it's a bit hit and miss sometimes. So what we try and do is offer a service where we can keep their pipeline warm.
Mm-hmm.
So do some initial qualification. So when they're ready, we've got a pipeline of people that can immediately start talking to start and bring additional business in. So try and take out the peaks and drops.
Yeah, so they've got, I hear that quite a lot. Obviously, I mean, we all do quite a bit of networking, and I have, I've been speaking to people, you get this with a lot of trade people, actually, tradesmen and women, and, you know, they don't go networking because they're busy, 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 but then the contract ends, and it's, you know, it is that feast or famine, isn't it? So that's the service then that you offer that will fantastic. And do you find there's kind of an industry that tends to take up that service, or, you know, is it quite relevant?
What we found is there's the your typical tradesmen find themselves in that situation, your plumbers, your electricians, your carpenters, etc., decorators. But we've also got a couple of management consultants that we provide that service to.
Yeah.
So that they get working all over the world on various things. So we keep an eye on their emails, keep the pipeline ticking over for them.
Yeah, because if they're here, they're everywhere. They can't be marketing themselves.
Now we've got it to a point they'll get an inquiry, and we can produce proposals on their behalf because we know them that well. So they can be working somewhere else, and we can be doing a proposal for them for another customer.
And that's a key thing you just hit on there, isn't it? The getting to know your clients, and that's really important to you. I can see it's
very much so. But the thing is, we do work hard, we do work long hours, and we don't want to work with people who don't share our values and don't want to work with us either, I suppose. It's a two-way thing.
It is a two-way thing, definitely,
yeah.
I think a lot of the things that I learned from working in agencies as well is it's very easy to take on a client, do a job for them, and then you say goodbye at the end of it. But I think what we want to build here is something that means that we become their kind of go-to support, because it's not just, it might just be a one-off project, but then 6 months down the line, we want them to want to work with us again. We want to have built that relationship that we've kept in touch, and that we know that we can be of assistance if anything else should come up, rather than it being just a one-off sort of a job. So I think first that relationship is really important, because it creates then that longevity in what we're doing, and for them it means that we start to understand more of what they do and can offer more to help
them. In a much more proactive way as well.
Yeah, because you've got that background knowledge of them, you know that you know their values and their goals. So you touched on values earlier then. Let's just, if I ask Kerry first, what are your three kind of core values then that you, or what you look for in a client? Why would they come to you? What's those values around your...
I think we look for people who care about what they do, because we care about what we do. So it's important that they are, you know, they're not in their business just for the sake of having to earn money. They're in it because it's their passion and what they want to make their money from. I think that's really important. I think honesty. It's really hard to work with clients who aren't upfront with you from the off, especially when you're doing things like bookkeeping and you uncover things further down the track, and then it can be very hard to get things back. And I think we're honest as people, and I think that's really...
We've been honest with people in the past to our detriment, really, where we've talked about a particular business problem and I've given an honest opinion, and the honest opinion's upset them. To a point where they've said we're not so sure, but they've come back. Because especially when you're in the early stages, nobody knows what they don't know, especially at the beginning. And I set my first business up in 1961, so I've got a good idea. But whether you're a startup or you're looking to exit, or all the stages in between, I think there'll be a few situations that I haven't come across. And I've been a director of FTSE organisations, I've built and sold businesses, and I've been shareholders in other businesses that we've helped to develop and sell on.
So that's a really good point. And I mean, that experience is just phenomenal. And I'm guessing that, you know, with being business support and consultancy and all that sort of thing, there are going to be times when the client isn't going to like what you've got to say, whether it's on, you know, something financial, the bookkeeping, or on a decision. Yeah. But just you saying there, you know, that particular client didn't like it but actually came back, I think that shows the value in what you do, because when you run your own business, it's not a 9-to-5. You can't just shut the door. It goes everywhere with you. It's constantly on your mind. And actually sometimes, you know, we all say, think with your head, not your heart, or your heart, not your head, and all this, but it's really hard. So actually that second set of... The pair of eyes outside of that.
I think especially when you're working on your own, I think for us working together, we have very different opinions and perspective on things sometimes. And so we help to bring each other back down to earth with certain things. And so if you're working on your own, you need someone who can take that step back. But because Dad and I work on slightly separate parts of the business, if I think this isn't quite right, I know that I can speak to Dad and he'll give me an honest opinion, as if he was advising a client, and vice versa. And so I think that way we kind of practice what we preach ourselves as well.
As well as giving that, delivering
one
it
of
to
the
clients.
Things you lack when you first set up a business is you need a sounding board. Is my thinking right? What do you think of this? What do you think of this? And we become our client's sounding boards in the early stages.
And that accountability as well. You know, it's easy to sit there and say, right, I'm going to set up a business and I'm going to do this and this is my goals. If you've got nobody holding you to account and you're checking in and action planning, then it can be easy to go off that path, can't it? So, So what about yourself? Did we get three there, or
did we do two?
Honesty, caring.
Yeah, we did two. The other one being work ethic. We've got, as a family, we've all got a very strong work ethic, and I wouldn't want to work with somebody who didn't have the same, because I think you're never going to achieve what they're not going to achieve what they want to, and you're not going to be able to achieve it for them, supporting them. So I think having a work ethic is the other one that's important.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Have you got three, Paul, or are they similar? Or?
Integrity.
I mean,
it's absolutely imperative, particularly given what we do in terms of the on the bookkeeping side, mm-hmm. people have got to be compliant, etc. So we've had clients who say, if that bill's big this month, I don't want to pay, but we've got to pay. You know, it's no good falling foul of these people.
Yeah.
So you've got to be compliant. I think commitment.
Nice.
Doing what you say.
Yeah.
So if we give somebody a deadline, we like to meet it. And I think that's important, because that's part of building up the trust.
Mm.
And then openness. This is different to honesty, insofar as we are happy to talk to people how we work, how we come up with our pricing structures anyway. If they don't like it, that's fine. But we don't want to get so far down the track then think that we'll be submitting any surprises.
Nice. And again, that works both ways, doesn't it? Because
if the
clients are open and honest with you guys, then it just stops any, in between. That's a good
thing. And then the other thing we do as the business becomes profitable, we're going to donate a percentage of our profits to Sarcoma UK, which is what Julie died with sarcoma, which is pretty well incurable. And Sarcoma UK need all the funds they can get to help to the research. So we'll do that in Julie's name.
Lovely. So touching on that, then, are they based nationally across the UK?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's research into...
It is a lot of research. A relatively small charity, because sarcoma is not really that well heard of. I think none of us had particularly heard of it before we got diagnosed.
No.
And because it is a rarer form of cancer, and depending on which type you have, it is relatively incurable. Normal, cancer research charities do a great job, but they don't necessarily have the specific funding allowed to look at sarcoma. And we saw firsthand how hard it can be.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Something that we feel very strongly about supporting.
But we've been having clients. We always like to give something back anyway, haven't we? And we've done, Kelly and I have both done a lot of work for charities in terms of organising events, fundraising. Mm-hmm. I was a mentor with the Prince's Trust. And I've just taken on the title of older friend with the Friendship Project.
Oh, fantastic.
So I'll take a young lad, seven years of age, and I've been for a couple of hours every week just to give him a break from his routine. And
fantastic.
To older friend, the first thing he said to me the first time I met him when he jumped in the car, he said, "My sister said you're an old man." Is it true? I said, "I can't argue with your sister, can I?"
Oh dear, that's amazing. That's just, it is so lovely. And you can see that, this business is so much more than just a business for you guys. It is a kind of a way of a life and a way of giving back and all those sorts of things. So we've talked about sort of some services. Paul, we spoke about Kerry Services. What about your consultancy and things like that? Because I know you've just took on, quite a big contract and...
Yeah, and...
These things about, calming it all down and then bigger contracts. So I don't think you're ever going to retire and rest, are you?
No, well, I've always been, ever since... I used to... I've done a lot of work in IT, and one of the areas of IT, I built and sold a software house in the 80s, and then I got into IT outsourcing, big, big deals. And I've had some long-term contracts where people have they're struggling to get sales in. So I've been asked to go in and pull the sales force together for them. put some proper practices in place, and even just to fill the gap where they've had salespeople who've left, and I go out and close some business for them. So it's that sort of thing. But also looking at business strategy. So where people lose a little bit of direction, and people get a bit mixed up really in terms of pulling teams together and looking at your strategy. It's amazing how many people say, in supposedly the same team, they're all working to a different strategy. So it's pulling teams together to get them all pointed in the same direction. And then with the startups, really it's bringing that 50 odd years of experience together to stop them making the mistakes that I made and lots of other people have made in startup situations.
When you start up, you can be so excited and so passionate that you just kind of almost say yes to anything, don't you? And so we were talking earlier about partnerships and things like that, and actually those agreements and those exit strategies, contracts in general and terms and conditions, are so important. But like you say, when you start out, you can easily think, it's okay, it won't happen to me, or even just don't know that can happen.
The lack of knowledge for a lot of people as well, because if you've never done it before.
But I would never class myself as a coach.
Okay.
No, because when I was younger, we used to go on holidays on the coach.
He's got to get a joke in, hasn't he?
So I wouldn't do that, but what I am is a hands-on advisor. So people almost use me like a business satin. If I got this situation, Paul, what would you do? And I say, I would do this, or I'll come and do it for you. But as with a coach, it's always aimed at the people and or developing them. I'm not against, but sometimes some of the coaches you see, I don't think you've got the necessary experience to give the advice that the people might need. I mean, from a practical point of view. If they've never been in that, they might be able to coach, but if they've never been in the situation, which I have many situations, good and bad, that I can advise.
I almost feel like I want to test him. What would you do in
this? Just don't ask him about a bad situation.
No. Now I'm going to ask. So one thing that's not work related, but maybe as a family passion, I am going to ask about, is this love of rugby and boxing that I've heard so much about.
Boxing's just each other.
Oh, boxing's just each other. Have you got some gloves?
In fairness, I am a bit of a boxing fan. I've been for many years, but our love of rugby stems from, well, I've been a rugby fan for a long, long time. I used to play a bit, and then Kenny got interested in rugby 1999-2000-ish.
Yeah, about then, yeah. Yeah. Season tickets, yeah.
And it really came to a head when England won the World Cup in 2003. Yeah. And we were already Worcester Warriors season ticket holders then, weren't we? And since then, Kenny's been on three Lions tours, New Zealand, South Africa and Australia. But it hasn't been on any yet.
Take on the next one.
It's just
classed as a business trip?
Maybe. Corporate away day.
Corporate away,
corporate away 3 weeks,
yeah. But yeah, it's we've had so many great times following rugby. And we've learned a lot from it as well, the sort of people we've met. That have been good from a business contact point of view as well. And the beauty of rugby as opposed to other sports is that it's like we all mix together, home and away. You know, you can be sitting next to the away fan, or you can be the away sitting next to a home fan. And there's never any, it's all banter and good humour. Yeah. You couldn't do that at a football match.
Mm-hmm. So, what is the team of choice then? Did I hear
Worcester Warriors is our rugby team? Yeah. But we both have it England fans, so we will go to all the games at Twickenham.
Fantastic.
So
we should have had a photo shoot in your rugby shirts, really, shouldn't we? Maybe that's for the next one.
Show me a couple of your photos before so go on.
Well, yeah. Talking of rugby and things, I obviously I've networked with you guys for a while now, and Paul, I've heard you speak about your 40 years in business and how you took us through your life path and your business journey. Kerry, you've just said you are going to be a speaker. Is it next week?
Wednesday this week.
Wednesday this week. And you're going to be talking about...
what being a rugby supporter has taught me about being self-employed.
So I can't wait to hear
that. But the title of the talk is What Goes on Tour Stays on Tour.
Yeah, so there's a lot that's not said.
Oh, I could imagine.
No.
But again, it's great that you're going out there, you're sharing those kind of tips and things, and how you've, again, you've took a passion and a pleasure in a sport and turned it.
So I've worked for Stories for a while, and I've worked for a sports travel company. So I've seen it from a supporter side and from how it functions from a corporate side, which can be quite frightening. but having seen both of those things has given me probably a bit more strength of character than perhaps a lot of other people, because it is still quite a male-dominated environment, and especially the first time around when I worked at Ulster, I was still quite relatively young, wasn't I? It can be a bit of a baptism of fire, and I think you learn very quickly not to take things all too seriously, which is probably helps working with Dad.
And do you find, so you touched on it there, very male-dominated industry and things like that. Do you find that, you know, how, without getting on the soapbox, do you think there are certain industries where they are very male-dominated? Do you, you know, because you're offering business solutions here, and I think, is it important that you've got, because you're great, you've got both a male perspective and a female perspective, and is that a good mix? Is there certain industries where you think actually this needs some real work to give women that voice?
I think sport is definitely changing, and certainly the first time I went, I mean, there's always been a lot of females working in, you know, good roles at Ulster Warriors, and so from that point of view, it was great. But it feels like, because the majority of the supporters are male, and the people that you might be working with from a marketing point of view, if you're delivering an event or in hospitality, even a lot of the people that attend the events, mm-hmm. it can feel quite male. But I do think it is changing, and I think it has changed certainly over
the last
15 or so years.
You can just see that watching sports,
I'm
talking about the women's football and everything else.
But I also think it's kind of a shame that they get that sort of stigma, because actually, as a female, I had a great time working in it, and I learnt a lot from it. And I never once felt intimidated by it. But I can see why some people potentially would do. But then I think it depends on who you are.
I suppose if you don't know, like you say, if you've never worked within that industry,
exactly.
It's very easy to look in and say, oh, but there's a lot of male that goes here. And actually, it's good to hear your side of things and say, well, it's not like that.
But on the flip side of that, I'm now as a VA... it's very female dominated. I'm yet to meet a male VA. Well, you don't count that.
You've just said you're a business advisor.
But from that side of things, it's now the complete opposite. And I am in networking groups that are all female. And sometimes that doesn't sit as well with me, because I'm used to a mix. And so I potentially go against a little bit that all female networking, because that doesn't feel right to me, because I'm used to having worked with a mix of people.
And of course, your job before was the engineering.
Yeah,
that was a bit male dominated, wasn't it? They're trying to market engineering products.
So I'm going to ask you now. I won't keep you much longer. I'm going to ask you now for your top three tips. This could be for. You know, any businesses, whether it's startup or looking to exit, top three tips that you think would help our readers and our listeners. Should I start with Paul this time?
My top tip is never forget why you started the business.
I love that it always comes back to that with you guys. It's
always
just
understand why you started the business. Don't be afraid to ask for help. This is to startups particularly.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of people out there, including us, and people you network with, who will happily give you the advice of their experience. They're not necessarily chargeable. It's just they want other people to do well. And the third is get your exit strategy. Work out what your exit plan is early on. And that's what I'll add a fourth one in, which is plan B.
Of course you will. Have a plan B. Interesting.
I think mine probably looking at it slightly differently, because this is the first time that I've ever had my own business, is not to be afraid if you don't know something, because there's always somebody out there who does. And I think that applies to our clients as well, that sometimes you can try and find the answer yourself when actually it's easier just to get the answer from somewhere else. Enjoy what you're doing. I think too many people, even in their own businesses, get taken down a path because of that early stage where you take on everything that you can. You don't always end up doing what you thought you would, and then you stop enjoying it. I think as soon as you've stopped enjoying it, it's pretty much game over. So I think for me, enjoying what you're doing is a key thing. And then the final one, I think we talk about this a lot, but it's probably been a key thing for me and Dad, is knowing how your personal vision and your business vision support each other. It wasn't something I'd necessarily considered, and I think it forced us to have some conversations that potentially we wouldn't have had before, because our personal visions are very different. We're at very different stages in our lives, but now we've got a combined business vision that supports both of that. And I think that has been a big learning curve for me, is knowing what, yes, I want my business to take off and I want it to be, you know, successful, but what do I want out of my personal life, because I don't want that to suffer as a result of that.
Absolutely. And like I say, running your own business can sometimes get that, you know, people get very hung up on what's business, what's personal. And actually, you know, someone said to me the other week, it's all just life.
Yeah.
So you got to, but you know, you need to have that time where it's not business, and enjoy
and we,
it. And
also, we do have a lot of fun in our business.
I can tell. I bet you're a right cheeky one, aren't you? Really?
Don't talk to Kelly. don't talk to my daughter like that.
See.
I think you'll see a lot of me rolling my eyes.
We've got it on camera. I'm going to definitely put that one in the magazine.
Especially at networking events.
She told me off on Friday. She came to Stratford on Friday. She said, I've got too much to say for myself.
It's just one too many. Couples, fine, but not every time.
Oh, do you know, it's been a real pleasure getting to know you guys. And like I say, I first met Paul... it must be about maybe 12 months ago now. Just networking.
Since our first joint floor, eh?
Yeah.
One of my early meetings was limited.
It was. And
Dunchurch, I think, in fact, was my
first. It could have been Dunchurch. And, you know, we've got to meet each other. We've done 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there. And the one thing that does come through is your wicked sense of humour, I will say, I think, and your just cheeky charm, maybe. But what was really lovely, well, he's looking at me as if to say I'm lying now, but yeah, just it's that getting to know you, isn't it? And there's, you know, we've had conversations about our businesses in general, mine and yours, and then obviously introducing Kerry, and it was wonderful to walk into the workshop the other week, and there was this friendly face sat looking at me, and I was like, brilliant, and I felt like I knew you already because of obviously knowing your dad. So thank you for being this... Editions cover stars.
Thank you.
And for the photo shoot's been lovely, and just having your top tips and advice, really, and I'm sure there'll be more within the magazine as well to come. So thank you both.
Thank you all for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, please leave us a review, and until next time, I'll see you soon.